Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning into this week's podcast. While this podcast is free for all of you, it actually costs our little nonprofit some significant resources to purchase rights for all this fabulous music. Please consider making a small gift to From the Top and keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org and click on Support.
Sometimes when kids discover just how much music means to them, it's a little like being struck by lightning. Well, today we'll meet a young musician who went outside after a horrible storm only to have his love of music knocked into him by a falling tree. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. We're at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where we'll also hear a teenage violinist play from a beautiful sonata by Frederick Delius. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. After all the shows we do in all these other cities, it's great to get such a warm welcome from our hometown crowd. And we're going to pass that good feeling right back at you. Today's show is full of heart. I mean, not only are the kids you'll meet at our normal, or should I say abnormal, knock your socks off musical level, but they're an especially likable group with some really heartwarming stories to tell. It's like we should call this show the son or daughter-in-law episode, because you're going to meet the kind of kids you'd wish your own kids would marry. Like this guy here. 17-year-old Gordon Neidinger. What are your intentions, young man?
I'm just here to play the mandolin, sir.
What? This isn't some bluegrass show. This isn't some goat rodeo. Actually, the mandolin, you should all know, is an instrument with classical roots going back to the 17th century, to Vivaldi. Beethoven worked with the mandolin. The piece you're going to play, Gordon, has more to do with Europe, Eastern Europe, than it has to do with Tennessee.
That's correct. We are going to play the Doina and E-flat Serba by Charlie Rappaport.
And this is your teacher, Charlie Rappaport.
This is my teacher. Charlie is my teacher. He's taught me for the last 5 years.
Hey, Gordon, tell us what a Doina and a Serba are.
Well, they're both Romanian dance forms. The Doina is slow, and the Serba is actually like a Romanian impression of what a Serbian dance would be like.
Okay. All right, Gordon, let's take this from the top. Thank you. Edward Neidinger, 17 years old, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, that is a great way to open a program, isn't there, Corinne? Thank you. Thank you for that. And your teacher, the composer, how about a shout-out? He's in our audience tonight, Charlie Rappaport. Is he in there? There he is. Gordon, you play in an ensemble that's reminiscent of the heyday of the mandolin's popularity in this country in the early 20th century.
I play in the Pittsburgh Mandolin Orchestra. The mandolin family of instruments is actually analogous to the violin family. We have the mandolin, which is like the violin, the mandola, which is like the viola, and the mandocello, which is like the violoncello. There's even a mando bass, which is equivalent to the violin double bass.
Do you guys do mandola jokes?
We joke about all of them.
Actually, I didn't realize this before, but, you know, as a commercial prospect, my gosh, the dissemination of mandolins in our society. Lyon and Healy, for instance, in the early 20th century, had 10,000 mandolins in stock. We're selling a lot of mandolins, right?
That's a lot of mandolins. Yeah, and the Lyon and Healy mandolins are still highly prized amongst mandolin orchestra members.
It was actually a part of the, you know, the mandolin was part of the Sears and Montgomery Ward catalogs as well.
Absolutely.
So were there lots of mandolin orchestras around the country in the 20s?
I understand that there was one in every high school at one point.
Wow. So you love playing the mandolin in all of its guises, but let's be honest, Gordon, you wouldn't be as good a player as you are if it weren't for an extraordinarily dramatic event that happened to you a few years ago. Tell that story, please.
It was 2008, and Hurricane Ike was bearing down on Pittsburgh like nothing the city had ever seen before. By 10 at night, it seemed like maybe things were dying down and it was safe to go outside. So my mom and I decided to go out to take a look at the damage. And that's when it happened. Out of nowhere, I'm knocked to the ground and pinned to the driveway by a huge falling tree. You know how people say that they hear screaming and then only later do they realize that the screaming was them? Well, that's what happened to me. I guess my life was saved by a crook in the trunk. At the hospital, they discover I've broken my arm in 6 places, and I'm told I might never play the mandolin again. Then later, they say maybe I'll be able to play the mandolin after 6 months and a lot of physical therapy. I'll never forget going to watch my mandolin orchestra rehearse when I was wearing my cast. That was tough. To hear the music and not be able to play, I missed the mandolin so much. When I finally got my cast off, I picked up the mandolin and discovered that I'd lost a ton of coordination. But I was determined to do a little bit of practicing. Slow practicing. Every day. And you know what? After a while, I realized that there was a perverse benefit to the whole thing, because before the accident, I didn't have the best technique in the world. But now, practicing slowly and relearning the instrument, somehow my technique was much better. It was a fresh start, and after a month or two, I was back up to full steam. So yeah, the moment that really crystallized my love for music and the mandolin happened when I was hit by a falling tree.
Gordon, amazing story, really, and absolutely true, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we should mention the fact that the tree fell on you, but you were sort of in the wrong place and the right place at the same time. I mean, if it had been off for a little bit, you would have actually had the tree actually falling on you. As it happened, the trunk had sort of a bend in it,
right,
and that fell over you, sort of.
Exactly. If it had been 6 inches to the left, it would have killed me. It would have hit my head. If it had been 6 inches to the right, it would have probably hit my elbow and ruined that for the rest of my life.
Right. So, well, I guess you also answered the question, you know, if the tree falls in the forest and there's only you to hear it, we all only hear you screaming. Gordon, it was wonderful having you play this piece of your teacher's and great having you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Gordon Neidinger, 17 years old from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
at Pat Gordon's performance on my flip pan, and I'll post it on FromTheTop.org so you can check out just how fast this boy's hands move. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Please welcome our next performer, 18-year-old violinist Carson Marshall. Carson, that sounded like a decidedly Amherstian welcome to you. Tell everybody exactly where you're from.
Well, first, it's actually Amherst.
Amherst. Not Amherst. Absolutely right.
And I live near Amherst in a town called Belchertown.
We have you to thank for our drinking water here in Boston.
Yes,
Belchertown.
Definitely. I'm very close to the Quabbin.
Very good. Yeah. You've brought us a piece we've never had on the show before. Please tell everyone what it is.
I'm going to play the second movement from Frederick Delius's third violin sonata.
and Dante Scherzando, second movement of Frederick Delius's Violin Sonata No. 3, played for us by 18-year-old violinist from Belchertown, Massachusetts, Carson Marshall. Carson is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. Thank you, Carson, for that singular experience. My gosh, we've never had that piece on the program, and you just made such a memorable moment of it.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Carson, you've been involved in a pretty risky activity for a violinist.
For a few years, I was involved in a lot of rock climbing. I used to do it, you know, 3 or 4 days a week and train pretty seriously. It was kind of hard on my tendons, and I'm taking a break right now because, you know, I have to do college auditions, and I can't afford to, you know, have one of my fingers fall off before
I know
a college audition. So
I mean, we can justify, you know, certain sports like tennis and say it's not about the fingers. You're using your arm and your back. Basketball, it's a little, I mean, you know, you jam a finger and you're in big trouble. Rock climbing is all fingers.
Yes.
What are you thinking? I mean, do you get something? Do you get something? I understand that you actually find something cathartic and emotionally sort of centering about rock climbing.
Yes. Well, rock climbing, for me, provides something that's a lot like violin, where it takes every ounce of focus that you have. And with rock climbing, as opposed to violin, there's an element of danger involved. And, you know, if you lose focus, you could fall and, you know, possibly hurt yourself. But for me, it's just a way for me to pour all of my energy and be really physical and be completely in my body, and I really love it.
Well, actually, there's a nice sort of lofty way that you have of phrasing and singing, and because you say yourself that, you know, when people say, well, I'm scared of heights, I could never do that, and you know, you say it's not the air that's dangerous, it's actually the ground that can kill you.
Yes.
So,
well, this airy statement that I made was that, you know, we're all down here on Earth with all of our problems and everything, and if you start rock climbing, then the higher you go, the farther away you get from all your problems. So
it's an excellent idea, excellent concept. Carson, there's something else you've had to struggle with as a musician, and it's not unlike a challenge that our next young musician on the show, 17-year-old violist Alexia Del Giudice, has also had to face. You both have coped with learning disabilities of one sort or another. Rather amazingly, even though learning disabilities have become so commonly diagnosed in American kids, we've almost never talked about them on this show, so we asked you and Alexia to tell us more.
It was really frustrating at these district auditions where I would go in and get perfect scores on my scales, but then absolutely bomb the sight reading.
I failed every single class in fifth grade.
I mean, I feel sorry for the people I worked with because I couldn't play. Someone would put a piece of music in front of me and I would just freak out.
I remember when I was in fifth grade, I had come to a public school from private, and the teacher was going over math problems on the board, and it was totally different from what I had learned. I had used, like, the checkerboard and all these hands-on things, and from going from that to sitting at a desk and just looking at a board, and I thought it was like the end of the world. I thought this was totally different, and I didn't understand how kids could learn this way.
I remember when I was at Suzuki camp, and everyone around me was in the right place and knew exactly where they were, and I felt like I was the only one that didn't know what was going on, and the notes in front of me didn't make any sense, and I just sat there and cried.
People will call me they used to call me a lot of awful things. They don't say that anymore, but especially when I just moved, they would literally attack me and tell me how I could never learn. Oh, I'm going to the special needs room.
I've had two different, completely different diagnoses. One of them was dyslexia, and one of them was mild ADHD, and neither of them really answered the problem that I was having.
Yeah, at first they diagnosed me with ADD, and that was completely wrong. My doctor said that I had that, and I needed medication for that. But my mom wanted to check thoroughly if I actually had that. And she went to another psychologist who said that I have nonverbal learning disability, which is completely different. And it's also a form of obsessive compulsive disorder, where if something isn't completely right, like if I don't complete something, I will feel completely anxiety ridden and I can't do anything unless I've achieved that.
Last summer at Interlochen, I was concertmaster of the orchestra, and they gave us an orchestral excerpt. If anyone's played Heldenleben in the first violins, there's this one page that is just an absolute nightmare. And I made a lot of friends, and if I heard someone playing the music right, I would go over and say, "Hello, my name is Carson. Can you show me how to do this?" And of course they would go, "But you're the concertmaster." And I say, "Shh, you know, help me with this so that I can stay concertmaster." I feel like this disability has really defined me as a player and as a person in the way I work and the way I go about doing music. And it's a funny thing that when my friends are complaining about having to read really strangely spelled music like Bartok or Ligeti, I just tell them that, well, for me, it's no harder to read that music than it is for me to read Suzuki Book 1.
With the viola, there is no anxiety at all for me. When I feel stressed or like everything's going wrong, if I pick up my viola, I just go into like the separate world where I don't feel stupid. I feel like the most intelligent person on the earth because I can feel the emotions of the viola and it just feeds off of how I feel. So I'm pretty much expressing my whole entire life and how I feel about things through my viola when I'm playing music.
Alexia Del Giudice has joined us on stage. Thanks so much to both of you kids for that honest and open discussion. It's wonderful to hear about your struggles and your successes. I mean, I should add that here you both are with, you know, problems of one sort or another as far as visually processing score, but here you are both playing beautiful performances absolutely from memory, probably most solidly than I've ever heard any kid on the program. So there you are. Beautiful job. Carson, thanks for that great performance of the Delius. Best of luck to you. We'll see you. Carson Marshall, 18 years old from Belchertown, Massachusetts. Alexia, now it's time to hear you play. I should mention that there's something else you have in common with Carson, and that's $10,000 in cash. You're both Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And also, like Carson, you're a Massachusetts kid from the town of South Easton?
Yes.
Okay. Tell everyone what you and I are going to perform together.
We're going to be performing the Bloch Suite Hebraic First Movement, The Rhapsody.
Thank you.
Matthew Doug Judicher, 17 years old from southeastern Massachusetts. And the Rhapsody from the Suite of Baruch by Ernest Bloch. Alexei, that was just so confessional and so intimate. I mean, I think we were all with you in your pain there. So beautifully projected, the whole mood of that piece.
Thank you.
Alexei, I'm going to play a couple of cuts of music, and I want you to tell me why I'm playing them. Here's cut number one. Never a bad time to play that, right? Who is that? Tell everyone.
That's My Chemical Romance, my favorite band.
There you go. Now, what's a nice violist like you listening to My Chemical Romance, which I'm very happy to see?
Well, I get a thrill out of live concerts. I love mosh pits.
Yikes.
Which is dangerous for me since I'm only 4'10", but I don't know. I just love the thrill of it. Everyone's so excited, and people are actually quite nice to me in mosh pits because of my height. They think I'm adorable.
Now, so you're telling me that they look at you with their 25 various piercings and they say, oh, look, what a cute girl. Okay, now for something completely different.
You coughed, and who was there? It's just too hard to bear. A mother doesn't matter anymore.
You, a Jewish mother?
Yeah, I was in the production Bye Bye Birdie. I played the old Jewish mother, Mae Peterson.
There you go.
They had to stuff my clothing to make me seem bigger and like an old lady. It was fun, but kind of awkward.
A bit. Hey, so tell me, do you get the same sort of musical, emotional charge when you sing as when you're playing viola? Is it a different experience?
It's much different. When I'm in musical theater, I'm like a diva. I have so much fun and I'm so energetic. And it's just fun for me. But when I play viola, it's much different. It's so much of a love for me, and it's all run on emotion, where I care so deeply about it that, I don't know, it's like my best friend in the whole world.
Is it a place you can go when other things are like stressing you out, for instance?
Yes, wow, I always play music when I'm stressed out.
That's wonderful. That's great. Well, you really brought us inward into this beautiful performance, and thank you so much for bringing it.
Thank you.
And being with us. Thank you, Alexei.
Thank you.
Alexei Beljubich, 17 years old, from southeastern Massachusetts.
As we say at the top of every episode, From the Top celebrates the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. But did you know that our radio show is just one of the many ways From the Top does that? Learn about our outreach efforts at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, we're coming to you from our home, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Coming up, a brilliant young flutist who also happens to be a very well-dressed guy. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. As our regular listeners know, we like to celebrate innovators in the field of music education. And today, we want to do a shout-out to someone here in our Boston audience. She's a violinist and founder of the Boston Public Quartet, an ensemble committed to working at a grassroots level. Their performances, regularly in storefront cafes, schools, and churches, blur the line between stage and audience. The quartet is also in residence at a Boston elementary school, where they use chamber music as the central teaching tool. Please welcome Betsy Hinkle. Betsy, how brave. I mean, the emphasis on chamber music at an elementary school where I'm sure you're the only music program there.
Yeah, well, we really consider chamber music the music of friends, and actually that's also the definition if you look it up on Wikipedia. The string quartet, we really see the string quartet as a working model of a small community. And So when we teach kids chamber music, we're teaching them really deep listening skills and all levels of communication, nonverbal, verbal. And we just feel that these skills are, you know, the basis for lots of skills in life and
great
really
citizen
important to teach.
Building and community building and great idea.
Yeah,
great work.
And the kids just love it, too. It's super fun for them.
If you all want to learn more about Betsy, the Boston Public Quartet, or its parent organization, Music Connects, visit fromthetop.org. Betsy, will you please introduce our next young musician?
Certainly. From Las Vegas, Nevada, and studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan, this is 16-year-old flutist Anthony Trionfo. He and Christopher O'Reilly will perform the Andante Pastorale and Scherzettino by Paul Toffanel.
Thank you.
We heard Paul Tavernelles, Andante Pastoral, and Sierzettino. Anthony Triunfo, 16 years old, from Las Vegas, Nevada, our flutist. Well done, Anthony. You know, I understand there was a goal you set. There was something you just had to do by the time you reached the age of 15. What was it?
Well, when I was younger, I used to read a lot of biographies of famous flute players, and I noticed that they always made their debut with an orchestra by the age of 15. So I needed to do that.
So when did you start working on this? At 14?
I started working on it at 14, and I auditioned in a competition to do that, but I didn't get it, and I was pretty upset. So I worked really hard, and I tried out the next year, and then I got it at the age of 15. So that's good.
That bio-musical clock was ticking there, Anthony, and you nailed it. Now, of course, you're studying at the Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan, and in addition, everyone should know we've also chosen you to win our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award, so things are really taking off for you, but life hasn't always been this easy. Talk about your mom and how much she's supported you on her own.
Well, a couple of years ago, my father passed away, and it was really hard on us. My mother and I had to learn to live a new life together without him, and she started working really hard to support just the two of us because it was a lot harder, and she works as a clerk. And when the opportunity for me to come to Interlochen came around, she really didn't want me to go. You know, it was like I was going to be leaving her forever. That's not the case, but that's how it felt. And she realized, though, that it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and she always has my best interests at heart, and she wants me to succeed in my music, so she let me go, and she's working really hard to make sure I stay there.
It's good that she's so understanding as well as being so supportive. That's really a rare combination. I didn't mean to get so serious there, quite frankly, Anthony, because according to the kids at Interlochen, you have more of a sassy reputation than a serious one. And to prove the point, I want all of our listeners to go to fromthetop.org and check out our new feature.
In cooperation with GQ, we present The Many Looks of Anthony Triunfo. Look number one.
This is a look that everyone here in the audience can see, but those of you at home, go to the website. This is Anthony, the performer, holding the flute. Describe it, my man.
Well, as you can see, I'm holding my flute. And also, I'm wearing black slacks with an off-white T-shirt because you don't want to wear a perfectly white T-shirt on a stage because it doesn't look as good in the light. And I'm also wearing a nice fitting vest because you always want to fit your body nicely when you perform.
Sort of a dressy but purple rainish sort of look. Very nice.
Look number two.
Okay, this is your school dance look. Talk about it a bit, won't you, Anthony?
Well, what you probably notice first is the fur vest. It grabs attention, and when you're at a dance, you want to get as much attention as possible. So I also have on a nice colorful V-neck T-shirt that brings attention. I'm wearing some green tights because I like to, and I'm wearing shorts.
I think the green tights are great. You could go for that Green Lantern sort of look. And and fake fur vest, I'm trusting, Anthony, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. You look marvelous.
And look number three.
This is what I'd call your sporty look. Please describe it.
Well, for one, when you work out, you should never wear sweats. It's horrible. So I chose some nice basketball shorts that are a nice blue color, and I'm wearing some authentic knee-high socks. I'm also wearing another colorful V-neck because you still want to bring attention to yourself in the gym, and a nice cape because when you're on the treadmill, it looks really cool.
Anthony, I think the cape is a truly inspired choice. You are one well-dressed young man, but more importantly, you are a superhero of a flutist. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Anthony Triumpo, 16 years old from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Pick Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Please welcome our final young performer, a 15-year-old pianist from Princeton Junction, New Jersey, Angie Zhang. Angie studies piano and cello at Juilliard, and she just won the competition for the Nordman Scholarship there. Congratulations, Angie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Angie, our young Fred Gordon had a tree fall on him, but you had a less dangerous experience when you were 10 that made you want to get serious about the piano.
Well, when I was 10, I won a concerto competition, so I had the opportunity to perform my concerto with an orchestra comprised of members from the Oregon Symphony and the Oregon Ballet Orchestra. And that was when I was 10, so, I mean, it was a pretty big deal for me at the time. And even more so, I played at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, and that hall holds almost 2,800 people. So that was like, really exciting for me. And,
It was exciting and not intimidating. You enjoyed the experience?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I was not nervous.
That's great. And now, of course, much earlier, before your performing career, you were famous as a critic. Tell everyone about, you were a critic of young pianists. Okay. How did that come about?
Well, my mom is a piano teacher, and when I was really young, like when I was about 2 years old, so I couldn't talk, I would give my mom's students the evil eye or stomp my foot whenever they made a mistake. And the thing was, I couldn't read music when I was 2, but I knew they would make a mistake, so it's pretty cool.
Angie, would you introduce the piece you're going to play for
us? Sure. I will be playing the Basso Ostinato by Shadrin. He is a Russian composer, and he was born in the 1930s.
A quirky and energetic piece, and a great way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our great young performers, and thank you all for joining us and listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And Angie, you can take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam. The assistant music producer is Caroline Cardias-Menos, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes, Claus Nystrom, and John Servies. Post-production by Tom Vagley. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear on our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
Thanks for downloading this week's From the Top podcast. If you liked what you heard, head over to our website, fromthetop.org, where you can listen to every show in its entirety. I'm Christopher O'Reilly. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.